Welcome to Kansas City Cannabis, where local roots and city pride thrive. Whether you're new or seasoned to cannabis, our expert bud tenders offer guidance and a welcoming atmosphere at our four KC locations. Experience genuine service and hometown heart. Visit kccannabis.org for more.
Welcome back into the program here on Sports Radio 810. I'm Joshua Briscoe, sitting in for Seren Petro. Rudy Salazar on the other side of the glass, filling in the shoes of Jed Marshall. Curtis Siebelt remains irreplaceable. He is here in spirit. We now go back to the football world, not just all our own now, though, as we go over to our friends. I'm going to say friends, plural, at Pro Football Focus, and our new friend, Ben Lindsay, who joins us now. You can follow him on Twitter at PFF underscore Lindsay, L-I-N-S-E-Y. Ben, I usually try to avoid just like a casual pleasantry question, but right now I genuinely mean it. How are you? Is everything okay in your world, the PFF world, everything going on right now?
I'm doing all right. Just bunkered down in my apartment right now. Nothing much special, but things are going okay.
I've said this multiple times also. I think that's the only reasonable answer. If anyone's like, I'm doing awesome, I'm having the best time of my life, something bad is going on. I'm glad to hear that it's all right, but not too good that it would be weird. What the super, super broad scale first here, Ben, with all of the storylines that we've seen going on over the last few weeks, I'm going to talk to you about Chris Jones. I'm going to talk about the Patriots and what they're doing and everything. But as we're in kind of this state of limbo, what has caught your eye recently that might be one of those stories among the NFL right now that you don't think is getting the conversation that it deserves at this point?
Yeah, well, the one I'll bring up is the one that sort of just broke in Joku. I thought that was interesting that he'd come out and request a trade, given that the Browns went out and got Austin Hooper. Because I thought they were going to run a lot of two tight end stuff with Stefanski coming over, especially without them having a strong number three wide receiver. So that kind of puts those ideas in jeopardy. And the other one that sort of fallen to the back burner is what's going to happen with Jamal Adams. He's one of the best defenders in the NFL. That he was sort of all over the news cycle a couple weeks ago, but that's died down a little bit. So just sort of seeing where he ends up, because he could be a big difference maker.
Yeah, and so if everyone else hasn't heard the news yet, David Njoku, the Browns tight end, has asked for a trade, apparently, via Drew Rosenhaus. It's something that I don't feel like we see a lot of, especially kind of in this window. Like you mentioned, they bring in Austin Hooper, and I don't know what the plan was supposed to be there. I don't necessarily know what exactly the Browns are trying to build, but whenever you look at a move like this happening, again, in kind of a weird window, usually the best chances to move come before the draft, whenever you can be flipped into a draft pick that team could use right away. What do you think the likelihood is of a move like that actually being executed?
Yeah, I think that's sort of, we're all waiting to see what happens, because even with free agents, there hasn't been a lot of moves, teams resigning their own guys, teams going out and signing new guys, players like Jadeveon Clowney, Jason Peters, Larry Warford. Good players are still out there on the market, and I think part of that is just the climate that we're in. Teams are sort of wary to go out and get these guys when they can't bring them in for full physicals and things like that. So I think that might make it a little bit more difficult for teams trying to trade someone, or just players looking to get back on a team.
And we spent some time talking about Jamal Adams. Schefter had the report of, like, here, I think it was seven teams that he said he'd go to. The Chiefs are on the list because Kansas City is a good place to be right now as an NFL player. Can you quantify Jamal Adams and exactly how good he is? Because as we were having these conversations, you know, the Chiefs have a duo at safety between Tyrann Mathieu and Juan Thornhill, assuming he comes back from injury, that they feel pretty good about. They also play a lot of three safety sets and sub packages. Tyrann Mathieu can play in the slot and does do that a lot. So when you look at a team that does have a duo of safeties right now, what exactly does Jamal Adams do best? How good is he at it? And do you think that the Chiefs should have given the Jets a call, or may still give the Jets a call?
I think the thing with Adams that you're looking at, that his best attribute is just that he can do so many things, and he does them all pretty well. He can play in the box. He can play in a linebacker role. He can play off the edge. He can play in the slot. There were times last year where he was the Jets' best edge rusher. So he can rush the passer. He can defend the run. He can cover. And I think that versatility is something that teams are increasingly sort of looking for on defense. the Derwin James, the Isaiah Simmons coming out of Clemson, that type of player who can fill multiple roles, because it sort of allows you to hide your weaknesses as a defense.
And that's something...
And I think that makes sense for the Chiefs.
Absolutely.
The second part of your question.
Yeah.
Especially with Matthew, they lose Kendall Fuller. I know he wasn't playing the slot towards the end of last year. Mm-hmm. Matthew was doing a lot of that. But if they can play Matthew more in the slot, because he's very good there, and get Matthew, Thornhill, and someone like Adams on the field together, that's a great thing for the defense.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was going to say, that Spagnuolo loves that. He loves being able to have guys be competent in lots of spots or be able to exploit some strengths in certain positions. This is a large-scale conversation we've been having around here for a while now, even since before they traded for Frank Clark last offseason. You can have this big conversation about investing in pass rush versus your coverage. Typically, though, that had been a conversation about pass rushers versus cornerbacks. The Chiefs have not invested in their corners very much, have gone to the safety well twice. Jamal Adams would be a third time. But because Adams and Matthew are so diverse, I don't know if that changes the equation at all. But where do you land in terms of sort of that philosophical discussion about where the best place is to invest in a defense?
Yeah, well, I think I might get kicked out of PFF if I said pass rush.
Okay. I don't want you to get in trouble. We can dump it. If you say pass rush.
No, thank God. I was just saying that I think from all the research that's been done by our research and development guys, coverage is the more important aspect for a defense. That's not to say that pass rush isn't important. Mm-hmm. The two kind of, they have a relationship, right? If your pass rush is great, it's going to speed up the quarterback, help your coverage. If your coverage is great, it's going to help your pass rush. And the pass rush is a little bit more consistent year to year. If you have a great pass rusher, you can be more confident that guy is going to be a great pass rusher next year. So I think it makes sense to invest in pass rush, but with the Chiefs already invested like they are in Frank Clark, moving on to someone like Chris Jones, it's tough to pay two guys along the defensive line right around $20 million per year.
Yeah, and so on Jones, obviously, that's been the topic these last few days, first and foremost around here. How do you, even sort of with that being said about the challenges of putting $40 million annually in two guys on your defensive line, how do you view Chris Jones in terms of where he fits in the league among interior pass rushers?
I think he's very much in that conversation. Aaron Donald's in here by himself,
yep.
Obviously, on the interior, but I think Jones is right in that conversation with guys like Cameron Hayward, Fletcher Cox. In that second group of interior defensive linemen, he's great. He's been one of the better pass rushers in the league the last couple of years. He's been good against the run as well. Has a couple dominant moves that he goes to. So I think when you're just looking at him in terms of league-wide, there's an argument for him being the second guy there.
And so, I mean, if the Chiefs don't pay him, let's say he plays under the franchise tag this year, they look for a trade partner next year, you would not throw yourself between Chris Jones and another team, or even maybe the Chiefs, if they did want to pay him that $20 million per price?
Yeah, I wouldn't throw myself in front of that. I think the thing for the Chiefs, probably the best outcome right now is trade, getting something good back, I think. You look at what the 49ers got for DeForest Buckner. Even. Mm-hmm. They traded him for the 13th overall pick, and then the Colts paid him that $20 million per year mark or whatever it was on top of that. So I think if the Chiefs were able to turn him into a high draft pick like that, that's probably what I would do.
Pro Football Focus had the roster rankings come out about a week ago, maybe a week and a half ago, something like that. And the Chiefs weren't even on the medal stand, Ben. And I'm furious. I'm not that mad, but I am curious about some of the methodology of it. The first four spots went Ravens 1, Saints 2, Niners 3, and Chiefs 4. We can talk about some of the strengths and weaknesses on the Chiefs side. But obviously the biggest strength is that they have Patrick Mahomes. And if you're going to rank, you know, teams by likelihood of winning the Super Bowl in 2020, I'm not sure that would be your same four. Can you speak at all to kind of how you figure out the math and the value of here's how much a quarterback can be worth if the rest of the roster isn't quite as good as another team?
Like you said, think if I was just betting on teams winning the Super Bowl, I'd probably have the Chiefs for it just because of Patrick Mahomes and how good he is. They have the best player in the league at the most important position. So that's obviously going to put them up towards the favorites. I think looking at that top four, I think that's a pretty solid upper tier in the NFL right now. Mm-hmm. There's not a whole lot that separates them. The reason I had the Chiefs four was that they just have a couple more weaknesses throughout their roster, specifically defensively. I know the cornerbacks played reasonably well last year from a statistic standpoint, but the grades were a little bit lower. Their linebacking core still has some questions. Whereas when you look at a team like the Saints, they're just a little bit stronger top to bottom, in my opinion.
And so how, like, what do you do in terms of that sliding scale of, I imagine that a quarterback is weighted more heavily than, you know, a team's second corner. And I don't know if there is a literal math to that, but I'm just sort of curious how either subjective or objectively you tried to balance that in a way that made sense from all perspectives.
Yeah, I put a little bit more weight into the quarterback. There wasn't a strict math to it. I kind of laid out the rosters and moved them around, got some input from other guys at the office. But valuable positions, quarterback, wide receiver, secondary, those obviously were weighed a little bit more. But I tried to make it, as much as I could, a book at the overall roster.
And I think that with that all being said, I think four makes sense, especially when you look at that cornerback spot that you mentioned. You mentioned Bashaud Breeland in the story, where we don't know exactly how many games he'll be playing for the Chiefs this year, but he played pretty well last year. Came in as a vet on a 1-year deal, brought him back on a 1-year deal for this year. Tre'Davious Ward, as a guy they traded for a player who never played a snap, a regular season snap with the Dallas Cowboys and Parker Anger. That investment worked out, but those guys playing well last year, like you said earlier. When you're looking at pass rush versus coverage, it's a more inconsistent, more volatile group. How worried should the Chiefs be right now about their corners being Breeland and Ward, and then a whole bunch of question marks after that?
Yeah, I think that's probably the biggest concern on the team right now. If you're looking at next year, from like a pure completion percentage allowed, things like that. Both Ward and Breeland played pretty well, but their grading was a little bit lower for us, and part of the reason was penalties. Part of it was they got lucky with some dropped and off-target passes where otherwise they were beat and they would have given up those big plays. So I think there's a chance that those guys could regress a little bit next year, which puts the Chiefs in a tough spot with lack of depth behind them.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting and seems also pretty likely. You also wrote about Willie Gay as the X factor in 2020. They bring him in the second round. Seems like a perfect fit for sort of that coverage linebacker role that they have just simply not had for the last couple of years. You guys gave him a very high coverage rate from his time at Mississippi State. Are you personally equally optimistic about Gay, and what do you think his role should be out of the gate?
Yeah, I'm pretty high on Gay. I know he had the big reasons that he slipped a little bit were obviously he didn't play that much at all at Mississippi State. Mm-hmm. He got suspended for, I think he punched his quarterback. He cheated on a chemistry test, he said, at the combine, which got him suspended again. Mm-hmm. But just athletically, the guy's a freak. He blew up the combine. And he has natural coverage instincts. Athleticism doesn't always translate to that, but in the time that Gay was on the field at Mississippi State, he showed a feel for coverage, which I think is really going to help Kansas City. And I think that they should try to get him into the rotation there as soon as they can.
Also in the roster rankings, you have the Patriots down at 18 pre-Cam Newton signing. I think that's a really interesting spot in terms of just where that roster is right now, and a defense that everybody seems to think very highly of, and an offense that has a lot of holes in it. What do you evaluate them as now with whatever you would expect from Cam Newton stepping in there? Does that change the landscape of the AFC for you at all?
I think it does, because Stidham is really an unknown, and chances are he wasn't going to play well next year if he went in as a starter. He's someone who graded poorly for us at PFF in his last year at Auburn. It was a mid to late round pick, so when you're projecting forward, the odds are stacked against him having success at the NFL. So bringing in Newton, he's not a perfect quarterback by any means. He has accuracy issues. But I think Belichick and Josh McDaniels are going to use the design run game, use his strengths to their advantage. And with the defense they have, they did lose some pieces, but that secondary is still really strong. I think they're going to be in contention for the AFC East, battling it out with the Bills and pushing for that three spot, because I think the Ravens and Chiefs are pretty much the top two teams right now.
Yeah, that's exactly where I would sit in terms of 1-2. But in sort of that hodgepodge of however many second-tier teams you might have, because, I mean, it could be Texans, Titans, Bills, Patriots, the Steelers might be in there, depending. I don't know where you would sort of put the battle for that third spot, but you do think that it's a clear 1-2 and then a drop-off and then that big mess, and then among that mess, would you say that the Patriots would be your favorite for that third spot, or does that go somewhere else?
I do think it's a clear 1-2 up at the top, like you said. And then after that, I'm not entirely sure who I'd have at 3. I think the Patriots are in contention. I think a team that people are kind of discounting are the Colts, mainly because everyone thinks Phillip Rivers is washed, but I still think he's a significant upgrade over what they had with Jacoby Brissett last year.
Yeah.
And people really liked them going into last season with Andrew Luck before he retired. So I think they're in that conversation, the Steelers, Titans. So there's a couple teams.
Also, just today you wrote about someone who I am going to say his name, and then some people are going to lean closer to their radios, and then some people are going to turn it off. But you looked at the NFL's highest-graded man coverage corners from 2019, and Marcus Peters came in at number 2. I loved Marcus Peters. I miss Marcus Peters. That second-round pick they got for him didn't feel like enough at the time. It turned into Juan Thornhill, so it's been all right for the Chiefs regardless, but they haven't had a corner like him since then. I'm not sure they've really tried to get a corner like him since then. But how good was he last year, and what do you how do you put him into what hierarchy of NFL corners that we have right now? Where does he fit in that big picture? As specifically in man coverage, he comes in just behind Stephon Gilmore in this review of 2019.
Well, that second round pick looks better compared to what the Rams got.
No kidding.
But I think Peters is someone who came into Baltimore. That was a great trade for them. They have one of the better secondaries in the NFL now. He can do it in man. He obviously has great instincts as far as taking chances on the ball. That can get him burnt on occasion. Mm-hmm. But more often than not, he's making the play. His interception numbers show that. I think Gilmore is the best cornerback in the NFL right now by a decent margin. And I think Peters is right in that group behind him with guys like Tre'Davious White, Jalen Ramsey, someone who wasn't on that list, Marshon Lattimore. So I think Peters is right in that group.
You also have Steven Nelson at 6, so this list has a starting duo of Chiefs corners from a couple years ago. What did you like from him in 2019 as he's kind of found his way in Pittsburgh?
And Nelson he's sort of unheralded last year for the Steelers.
Yeah.
All the attention went to the Minkah Fitzpatrick trade, and for good reason, because Fitzpatrick played really well. But I think Nelson came in, and he just did a really good job of limiting production, particularly in man coverage. Teams didn't even throw the ball his way that often. And when you look at stuff like yards per coverage snap, receptions per coverage snap, he was right up there with the best guys in the league. So I think he had a great year, and the Steelers are in good shape with him and Hayden again next year.
There's a lot of cornerback talent in the AFC, and I am jealous. I'm not that worried. I like Charvarius Ward a lot, but I am jealous of some of these guys that have been here or will spend a lot of time very near here. One last thing for you, Ben. Among the rest of the AFC West, I haven't spent a moment of this offseason going like, oh man, what is the thing that could dethrone the Chiefs? Like, they are so far and away the favorite, the number one with a bullet in the division. But whenever you look at those other three teams, if you said, you know what, I think this is the team that could maybe surprise us. I mean, the Chargers get some hype like that every year, but you think that, you know, that Philip Rivers has something left in the tank and he's gone now. I'm not totally sure what the Raiders are doing. I don't know how you feel about Drew Locke. Among the rest of the AFC teams, do any of them have that potential to, if not challenge the Chiefs, maybe be a wild card out of the West?
If I had to pick one, I think it would be the Broncos. And it really all comes down to what does Drew Locke do in his second season.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of hype surrounding him. I think some of that hype is unjustified based on his 5-game stretch to end last year. But they've built a really strong roster around him. On offense, they gave him weapons with Judy and Hamler in the draft. They already have Cortland Sutton. Their offensive line's not terrible. Defensively, they have some pieces. So I think they're putting him in a position to succeed. And whether or not they have success next year really comes down to whether or not Bach takes that next step.
Ben, I really appreciate your time. Again, you can get Ben Lindsay's work at PFF_Lindsay on Twitter, senior writer at Pro Football Focus. I appreciate you making some time. Hope you have a good weekend and stay just fine, just at least okay throughout another weekend.
Likewise, anytime.
Again, Ben Lindsay, you can follow him on Twitter at PFF_Lindsay. An interesting look at some of the big stories going on around the AFC. We'll talk about a few more of those things and what I think about some of the stuff Ben said. I miss Marcus Peters. I'm not going to apologize. I'm not going to end this segment with an apology. I miss Marcus Peters, and that's just who I am, damn it. I'm Joshua Briscoe filling in for Seren Petro here in the program.
The Program with Seren Petro.
There's a familiar saying that knowledge is power, but there's another one that may be more to the point, that a little knowledge is a dangerous thing.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back into the program here on Sports Radio 810. I'm Joshua Briscoe, filling in for Seren Petro. Rudy Salazar on the other side of the glass in Jed Marshall's seat. We leave a seat empty for Curtis Siebold, who we can never replace or even attempt to. None of us know enough things. We would have to just get 7 people as a hive mind to just sort of stack atop each other to fill in for Curtis. Just like they all have to be like experts in specific arrows. There's no chance. Thanks again to Ben Lindsay of PFF for joining us. I really enjoy Pro Football Focus's work, and frankly, I think a lot of the things that we talked about there, where the Chiefs are not the, you know, dominant world eaters like the Silver Surfer. I think he was just the beacon for the world. Jason is around here
Galacticus.
Somewhere.
Galacticus is the guy who eats the world.
Wow.
Silver Surfer is the guy who is his ward. He travels to said planets to find them.
That's right. And then Galacticus comes to the Silver Board. Is the board the beacon or is he the beacon? Does it matter?
That I don't know. I think Galacticus just knows where the Silver Surfer is at, or at the very least, the Silver Surfer goes to places and finds him, and then it's like, hey, come here.
Come
to my signal.
I remember seeing the movie, and I remember there being the word beacon being somehow involved. So
he probably either is a beacon or like has a beacon.
That's,
you know what I mean?
Right. Beacon might be the surfboard.
But I mean, maybe.
Because then could he abandon it, and then could he just launch it into space and then go somewhere else? I don't know.
It's possible, but I feel like that's a slight flaw in the design. Like, I feel like he would be himself, just like is. Like, Galacticus just knows where he is.
In addition, the board also serves as a beacon for Galacticus.
Look at you go.
Boom! That's from Wikipedia. Clearly, I think I saw the Fantastic Four Rise of the Silver Surfer. I think I saw it in theaters whenever it came out. 2007.
So,
I would have been 13. Yeah.
I could be wrong, but wasn't Chris Evans Human Torch?
Sure was.
Yeah.
Jessica Alba was the Invisible Woman.
I always forget that, like, he did stuff, because, like, I don't remember him until Captain America.
Right.
I forget that, like, no, he did stuff quite a bit before Captain America. I don't know if a lot necessarily, like how much, but like enough. He did enough stuff.
Yeah, he did quite a bit. I've also have not seen or heard from the guy who played Mr. Fantastic since then. And
who was it?
his first name is spelled I-O-A-N, and I don't know how to deal with that many.
Ian?
It could just be Ian.
My guess is
with three vowels.
Pronounced Ian, but it's just, you know, different.
Also, Michael Chiklis was the thing, which is a name that I recognize for reasons I'm not totally sure I understand. Ian, perhaps, Grufford. He is known for Fantastic Four, Fantastic Four Rise of the Silver Surfer, King Arthur, and Titanic. He was Fifth Officer Lowe. Doesn't seem like he's done a ton of...
If you're Fifth Officer in anything, are you really known for... Like, is that something you want to be known for? Because at that point...
You
I know
Titanic.
I know you need four, like, on that list. Like, they just always put four things. But I, if I'm him and I see that, I think I just call up IMDb. I'm like, hey, I think we should go with three here.
He was the voice of a necromancer in Diablo 3.
See, that's better.
He was a wet work man in Horrible Bosses. Yeah, not a lot of leading roles for him, it appears, since Fantastic Four.
Not going to be the new Mr. Fantastic either. Mr. John Krasinski all comes back around.
Wait, hold on. Is that happening for sure?
It's not official, but he's met with Marvel people, and like they want him in the Marvel universe. He wants to be in it. They've been trying to make it work for years. He was actually up for Captain America. It came down to him and Chris Evans.
I think I've heard that.
Which I think they went with the right decision.
Yeah.
Because like I love John Krasinski,
but
I think he'll be a better Mr. Fantastic. So everybody believes, because now that Marvel has those rights again, that he will be Mr. Fantastic. Because they got those, because Fox has obviously had them. They now have those rights.
I'm looking at the Fantastic Four Rise of the Silver Surfer IMDb page. Excuse me, not Silver Surfer, just the first one. And Maria Menounos in that film is listed as playing sexy nurse. Just not even trying. I mean, just unbelievable. I was going to see if there's anything else that Chris Evans had been in that was noteworthy before all of this. He was in some TV movies and miniseries and... Oh my goodness. Okay, I got one. And then we'll talk about football again, I promise.
Do we have to?
Chris Evans was the voice of Casey Jones in the TMNT movie from 2007. Did you know that? You know, he has the hockey mask. Oh, yeah, it was the animated. I think it had...
So I don't think I saw the animated one.
Yeah, there were like a bunch of monsters that come out of a portal or something they have to like chase down, I think.
Yeah, I know what you're talking
Patrick
about.
Patrick Stewart is also in it, I guess.
I did not see this movie. That's like weirdly enough, the only Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles like movies I've consumed are all the live action ones, cuz like when I was a kid growing up, they had like 3 of them come out, which I will still die for to this
day. Return of the Ooze.
Like those was 3, one of them. Those 3 movies. Like, were they great?
No.
No.
They're bad.
But do I love them?
Yes.
Absolutely.
No, the TMNT from 2007, I think, is fully animated, and it is fully animated, and it, yeah, I vaguely remember the plot, I believe. But Chris Evans was the voice of Casey.
I think in the third one, they went back in time, and like, back
that
to, like,
right.
You know, the, I don't know if it was Japan or China, but an Asian country, because I remember they were more in like feudal Japan or, you know, like samurais, like that kind of thing. I don't remember specifically where, but that
it
age.
Was just called
and I was like,
Shows 3 also.
Yeah, like this is awesome.
Yeah, I'm glad that worked for you.
Great movies.
I don't think I've seen this one. I did watch the TV shows a lot though. I just had those on DVD.
Also, the video game on Super Nintendo. One of my all-time favorites.
One of my all-time favorites, Turtles Through Time.
Yeah.
They have that at Up-Down, but I remember playing it with, like, legit a roll of quarters at a Burger King, like, play place.
Yep.
I think it must have been whenever we lived in Wichita. I've mentioned this several times, and I think most times my mom remembers, like, what I'm talking about. But, like, my brother and I would just play through it, and I think we ended up just, like, having the high score.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I end up at Up-Down or whatever... I'm if I find TMNT Turtles in Time, It's all I have to play it. It's also, I think, the only stand-up arcade game that I would think, like, if I found it for, I don't know how much those typically go for. I imagine that they're like $2,000. I don't know. I'm
I was
just
gonna
guessing.
Say 1 to 2.
If I found a working copy of one of those, it would be one of the very few things that I would consider like having, just because it's so memorable.
Yeah.
I would not get my money's worth playing it by any means, but having it's also just I was gonna say it's extremely Animal Crossing logic to just like, I'm gonna buy a stand up video game, arcade game, and then I remember that there was one in my shop in Animal Crossing when I logged on this morning. And so I do have one of those in Animal Crossing now. And I guess I have to buy one in real life.
Yep, that's how that works.
I think that's how that works.
Yeah. So there was it was just a normal, like, so where I grew up, which is now the Chinese restaurant that I've talked about a few times with you, before that it was just a regular restaurant. They used to have arcade games in there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was always Marvel versus Capcom.
Mm-hmm.
And then that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game.
That's so good.
I then also at some point got it on Super Nintendo, so I could play it at home, of course, because why not? Why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
And it was great. Loved it.
You were playing Turtles in Time
yes.
at home?
Yeah, they made them all on Super Nintendo, I'm pretty sure.
Well, hold on. Now everybody,
I'm pretty sure it was Turtles in Time.
Now, I don't know, is it in time or through time? I've been saying in, I think I Googled in time. It might be through time. Regardless, I didn't know that. If that ever ends up, like, ported over to Switch, I would be a very happy boy.
Yep. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Turtles in Time, Super Nintendo.
So the Switch has a Super Nintendo emulator on it. Hey, Nintendo, are you listening to me right now?
It's coming.
Oh, man, that would be so exciting.
I'm looking. If you want to buy a pre-owned copy of it, $50, Josh.
But I would
I'm looking at it right now.
But yeah. I would also need. I don't have a Super Nintendo
at this
point. So I'd also have to buy one
of those. It was the fourth game in the series.
What?
Yeah, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 4, Turtles in Time. Because there was another one, like, I think I also had 3, which is like something in Manhattan, like Madness in Manhattan or something like that.
Mm-hmm. I don't think I've played that one. I would love it. It looks like I might be on eBay right now for about $570. NBA Jam with Wi-Fi, $400 at Walmart. This is definitely not actual vintage old versions, but Well, I'm gonna have to do some very serious thinking and perhaps light budgeting. We'll take a break and talk about football whenever we come back here in the program. Welcome back into the program here on Sports Radio 810. I'm Josh Briscoe, filling in for Seren Petro on this 3rd of July. And it's raining outside. Not cool weather. Like, you're going to be a billion degrees for the next month. Could we just get, like, 2 dry days? I didn't chop all that wood to get rained on. I've still got, a blister left over on my hand right now. How incredibly strong and manly I am. Let's talk about something that came up at the beginning of the hour when we talked to Ben Lindsay of Pro Football Focus. The trade request from Cleveland tight end David Njoku. The Browns tight end plan this whole offseason was a little odd. They signed Austin Hooper to a 4-year, $44 million deal with $23 million guaranteed in March. And then they drafted Harrison Bryant in the 4th round of the 2020 draft. But like Ben said, most people thought they're going to play a lot of 2 tight end sets with new head coach Kevin Stefanski. Could have had all 3 of those guys playing. And Njoku has played really well in Cleveland. Like, he is a legitimately good tight end that I think you would expect to be a number one tight end. If it would have been Njoku and then they draft Harrison Bryant, that's still a pretty nice little duo. Adding Austin Hooper, who I'm slightly less bullish on for some reason, I'm not even totally sure why, felt like a bit of an odd move. Now, you may be thinking, what's that? Extremely talented 23-year-old tight end on the open market in a time whenever his team doesn't have a whole lot of leverage. Or, I mean, his team has leverage in terms of keeping him, but like where the market might not be smoking hot right now. The Chiefs have Travis Kelce, who is, as all of us are, getting older. They've addressed the depth issue ever so slightly as we spent last offseason legitimately having a real conversation about like who should the Chiefs' number two tight end be and will it matter. We legitimately were trying to talk ourselves into an argument about Deion Yelder and Blake Bell. And as things stand right now, it is going to be, I would say, less of a dominant conversation topic going into 2020, not because of John Lovett, Rudy. Was that your joke? Put the microphone down.
It was.
Was it really?
It was. I was going to say, you're right, because John Lovett's clearly the backup.
But they brought in Ricky Seals-Jones this offseason, who is like a quintessential pass-catching tight end, where he does not get into space as well as someone like Travis Kelce does, doesn't create space that as well as Travis Kelce does, because very few tight ends in football ever have been as good at that as Travis Kelce. But we talked about Ricky Seals-Jones with Seth Kaiser whenever the move happened. And we kind of got to the point to say, hey, look, if you can manufacture space for Ricky Seals-Jones to get into and for it to manufacture him open, if the ball ends up in his hands, he's hard to bring down. He's going to be a problem for opposing defenses, and he really can exploit weaknesses whenever he is no bleep the fifth option on the field at any given moment.
But Josh, do the Chiefs have somebody who can do that? Can exploit him open? Do they have a mind?
Like an offensive genius that can do that with all the weapons around them? No, but like, I'm living in a fantasy world.
If they have a quarterback who can get him the ball?
If they had Kevin Stefanski, I would think maybe. And Baker Mayfield. I think Stefanski and Mayfield definitely could have. I don't know. Ricky Seals-Jones, he had that last year. He was with Arizona still last year, right?
I believe so.
I think so also. But I am not second guessing when he was... hold on. Now I'm second guessing myself.
No, he was in Cleveland last year.
That's right. Okay, yes. Hold on. So last year he had Baker, but not Kevin Stefanski. He was in Arizona. Yeah, because he ended up in Cleveland with Demetrius Harris and the aforementioned Deion Yelder. Yes. Not Deion Yelder, excuse me. The aforementioned David Njoku.
Yes. He spent his first 2 years in Arizona.
Went to Cleveland, kind of disappeared. We were looking at a bunch of his Arizona film. We were talking to Seth and everything. Yeah, I got that flipped. But so, Ricky Seals-Jones is like most interesting film, typically from Arizona. Makes me think he could be this second tight end role that the Chiefs would love. However, Brett Veach should call about Njoku. Just, hey guys, you have three tight ends. I'm just curious, you know, we're just out here bargain hunting. We're just looking around. We're just seeing what's available. What's your price right now? What are you thinking? Because he is 23. And Ricky Seals-Jones, who is in his fourth year, I don't remember how old he is, but he's not old. He's certainly younger than
Kelce. He will be in his 25 season.
Okay.
He is currently 25. That's why I wasn't for sure if he was 24 right now, but he is currently 25 and will obviously be 25 when the season happens.
So he is young enough that you could try to create a little narrative about like, oh, maybe he might be a number two tight end in this offense that has a few plays this year. Yeah, that you can count on your fingers numbers of plays that Ricky Seals-Jones made, and that would be great. Like I'm rooting for that. If he has 10 nice plays this year, he'll have more than Blake Bell and Deion Yelder combined. and will do really excellent things in this offense. But if you're looking at a multi-year duo between Travis Kelce and somebody else, and then maybe they end up becoming the featured guy in that tight end group a couple of years down the road, and then they, you know, then Travis Kelce retires in 4 or 5 years, then I think we could have a legitimate conversation about David Njoku.
And you're going to have him for 2 years because the Browns, his fifth year option has been picked up.
Yeah.
So which he was a later first round pick. It's only $6 million. It's not a lot.
And like, my one hesitation there is just that I don't know if part of his frustration now would be contractual, thinking that like he knows he's not going to get the deal from Cleveland. That's not in the report. Like the report is just he wants out. And so that's purely speculative there.
I think it's a combination of the fact that they went out and added two tight ends this offseason.
That's right.
And him. And so, like, even though they are a team that run or believed to be a team this year that's going to run a lot of double tight ends, if you're him, I think you do look at it like, one, I haven't had the production. You know, we've had a lot of inconsistent offensive play as it is. And there's already Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry.
That's true.
And now you're adding Austin Hooper, who they paid a lot of money.
Yeah.
And they go out now with a fourth round draft pick, so it's not like they invested a ton, but it's also not like a seventh rounder undrafted free agent guy. So I think there's a combination of I'm not going to get paid by this team probably because the money's just everywhere else. But also, I don't know if I'm going to produce to where anybody's going to want to necessarily pay me.
And also, specifically in Cleveland, that really is going to matter for him because he needs to show that he can do it again right now. He only played in 4 games last year. He had an excellent 2018. And maybe there's a doubt about his health in the Browns' move for Hooper and then also draft another tight end in the fourth round. Maybe that's all sort of wrapped up together. But like in 2018, he goes 14 starts into 16 games. He catches 56 passes for 600 and some yards. That's 11 yards per reception. He was going 12 yards per reception in his rookie season in 2017. I'm not telling you that he's George Kittle who should come in and take the torch from Travis Kelce. But it would become pardon the language, heck of a duo to have, and even trio, to go Kelce, Njoku, RSJ. We're close friends. I call him RSJ. I'm not like pounding the table right now. I'm not mandating that this does happen. I think there's a decent chance that if the Browns do want to move on, someone else probably drives up that market a little bit. There have already been several things about the Cowboys reportedly perhaps being interested. I just think they're interested in everybody all the time, it seems like. I don't think there's been a guy on a trading block in the last 10 years who hasn't had a Cowboys rumor immediately afterwards. But it would be interesting. And as the Chiefs just continue to double down on offensive players, it makes even more sense than, like, even the Jamal Adams conversations we were having. Like, he's better at his job than David Njoku is at his. But we have seen such bright spots from Njoku. Even with the injury last year, like, if that drives the price down some, that might be ideal for the Chiefs. Also, he'd be coming into a place where he doesn't have to be the guy, and he would be coming into a place where he can sort of earn back his reputation that he was earning throughout 2018 and even a little bit in 2017 in a few spots. I would be very interested, and I would be very interested to hear what the Browns are looking for if he does get moved. I'll reserve judgment, obviously, until we have a better indication of what the price tag might be. But I would be a damned fool if I thought for 1 second that an offensive weapon could be added to the Chiefs and Veach and Reed wouldn't call them. One other thing, though, there was an article from Shiel Kapadia in The Athletic this week. He was actually on The Zone to talk about it. And he talked a little bit about the Chiefs' successes by personnel. And the Chiefs should run as much 11 personnel as is humanly possible. With that, because it means you get another receiver out there. The thing is, when one of those tight ends is Travis Kelce, or even perhaps if one of those tight ends is David Njoku, or maybe even Ricky Seals-Jones, it's just more pass catchers. So while I do think all those personnel breakdowns are really interesting, and you should read that story if you haven't yet in The Athletic, it's not, they're not restrictive. They're interesting as splits, but they're not restrictive because nothing about the Chiefs' offense is. It's always about adding more playmakers and trying to figure out then how you put them in good situations to be successful. So I'm always very interested whenever I see an offensive player on the board because I know Andy Reid and Brett Veach are as well. I'm also excited to talk about the baseball return that we've seen today. David Leske is next.